Welcome to the Jevis Brief, only on Contra Radio Network.
Hello again, intelligentsia. Let me get this adjusted here. Nah, it's too dark. Here, let me all this look washed out. How's that? All right, look. Here's the situation, my friends. I just got in from the road, met some great people in Iowa. I went to the Oktoberfest at the Amana Colonies. I urge you to go check it out. It was a good time. It was well worth it. If you want to know what the Amana Colonies are, just look them up online. Okay. I just spent, and this is a lesson for all of us, including me, I spent the last 2 hours trying to fix the audio because I got a word from Mark Hopkins over in Virginia. Said, man, what's up with your audio? And I said, I don't know. So I figured out I'll fix it for this episode. I spent the last 2 hours. I was going absolutely berserk. Finally said, that's it. Took the dog. We went outside. And got myself back together again, came back up here, and I'm trying to find out what is going on with my mixer board. It was working just a bit ago. Now it's not working at all, and I'm thinking, oh, God, now I got to get new software. Real pain in this. Hi, Kat. So I said, you know what, that's it. And I started following cords. Sure enough, the damn thing was unplugged from the power supply. And I thought, what the hell is wrong with me? Plugged it back in, did a couple more tests. I swear, I must have done 250 recording tests trying to get this audio right. I hope you appreciate the effort I have put in for you. All right. For the commentary. You know, I was thinking about this because we've all been hearing about the gain of function coming out of Wuhan, how NIH has funded it. Fauci is a piece of... No, you know what? He's a cat turd. Anyway, so I'm thinking to myself, why in the hell would they be doing a gain of function? It's bad enough they're playing around with this shit. As a matter of fact, in my own opinion, they shouldn't be playing around with this stuff at all. There's no need for it. Anyway. So I'm thinking, well, let me think here. I'm not going to get into the whole conspiracy thing. Yes, I know. Everybody's a conspiracy theorist until they're proven right. In which case, then they're just ignored. God forbid. But anyways. So I'm thinking, what would they be doing with the gain of function? And I thought, you know what, maybe this is it. And I'm out of the loop. So I'm thinking they haven't had anything modeled with new technology. Yeah, they played with Zika. They played with swine flu. They played with bird flu. This one is a tad different. I had it back in August. I actually contracted a variant. And I got to tell you, I'm thinking to myself, yeah, it's a bad flu. I don't have to go to the hospital, you know, any of the other stuff. And I'm thinking, what if they release this to track, to see how it spreads around the planet? That gives them a whole new global model that they can model off on the computer simulations and whatnot. And then I thought to myself, what if this is just a test run? Let's see how it spreads. Let's see how the population reacts to it. Let's see how countries react. Let's see a whole bunch of things they wanted to find out. So, hold on. Let me straighten this up. Yeah, I got so pissed off I almost threw my computer. I felt like Tom Brady. So then I thought, what if this is just a test run? What's coming next? What are they playing with? Because you know they're playing with crap they shouldn't be. You just know it. So I'm thinking to myself, all right. Meanwhile, I just wanted to share my thoughts with you on that. By the way, now, preppers, is the time to get your N95 mask. Now, I want you to know something. Just because you go to the store and they got their little plastic shields, oh, the shields will protect me from the customers. Guess what? The virus can find its way around that. You know why? Because it floats in the air. Oh, yeah. And those silly masks that they have out. Here, wear this. No, don't. It's useless. It has been useless. The last I saw out of, Stanford Medical? Or was it Johns Hopkins? One of them did a study on the transmission and the mask and all that crap. The mask that they, the light blue mask, or sometimes they're yellow, 20%. 20% reduction. That's it. There's your reduction. Hope you like it. Hope it fits. If you really want to stop that crap, you got to get an N95. Now's the time to get them because they're in stock. Because who knows what the hell the Chinese are going to do next. Because you start looking at where all these infections are coming from and viruses, they're coming out of China. And that makes sense. Why? Because with the communist government, the government looks at the people, the population, as their property. Therefore, especially if you got a few billion people, guess what? We can release it, and if they die, so what? That's one less person we have to take care of. Well, all right. Now, before Hurricane Ian, so we're going to segue that way. All right. Ian will start coming ashore, and I said, preppers, now is the time to get your shit together. And I put it on social media. If you want to follow me on Gab, just look Contra Radio Network, I'm there. Contra Radio Network on USA.life, mumblet.com, you'll find me there. Contra Radio Network again. Anyways, I posted there. I said, the media is going crazy like 2 or 3 days before the storm hits. Oh, the stores are being ransacked. There's nothing on the shelves. I'm thinking to myself, this is why you're a prepper. Now is the time to get your stuff. Or better yet, I misspoke. You should have had your stuff already. And because you're a prepper, who cares if the store shelves go bare? You've been saving. You've been preparing. You are ready for this. Yes, it's true. You probably have to, do some things to the house or whatnot to try, for stormproof it the best you can. So, I want you preppers and patriots out there to be aware of what's coming probably in the next month or so. You are going to see an increase in your homeowner's insurance. Why? The insurance companies can't lose money. They're going to pass that cost off to you, the customers. And it's going to be industry-wide. Now, the way I see it, I look at, if you live in Florida, it's a beautiful state. I was born there, love it there. There comes a price. And the price is sometimes you got to deal with hurricanes. And you know that. You buy a house. You know there's a possibility what could happen. Well, that's why I have insurance. Oh, yeah. Well, does it do any good when your house is floating down the street? What good does that do you? That will take months. Months for them to rebuild. Dog, what is it? All right. Go down and see what it is. All right. Go get them. Come back up when you're ready. Go get them. I know. All right. So, I talk to my dog that way all the time. I take him everywhere with me. Anyways. So, what's going to happen is this, my friends. And this is true. You'll see your insurance premiums rise. However, the problem is this. I don't live in Florida. I live north of Chicago. Why am I paying extra? Because people in Florida decide they want to live there and they got to deal with hurricanes. They should be hit with a surcharge every year. This is the price you pay for living in Florida. It's the same as if you live in California. Hey, all right, thank you. Thank you very much. I don't hear any black helicopters. That'll be enough. Thank you. Sorry. So, let's just say I lived on the West Coast. We got fires. We got forest fires. Happens every year. Guess what? If you want to live in California, and that's great, if you choose to live that lifestyle under that political ideology, God love you. But why should I have to pay increased insurance to cover your ass? My house washed down. It washed away. Oh, well. Have more insurance. Do whatever it takes. I don't think any of us should have to cover someone else's cost. This is bad. That's as bad as Obamacare. Well, if we all put in, then we can all take from the pot. Not really. No. Remember with Obamacare, $2,500. It's going to drop $2,500. We got to pass this. It's great. Oh, yeah. Congress loved it up until they found, especially when they exempted themselves from it. That was even better. Oh, you guys got to get it. I got a better idea. Why don't you live with the laws you pass? Same thing. I don't want to pay extra on my homeowner's insurance to cover someone who lives in Florida. I mean, that's just an example. Now, if I remember right, the new housing has to have the roof strapped on, and I believe they might have a 1% surcharge for hurricanes. I got a better idea. Make it 2 or 3%. You live in California? You know every year there's a good possibility you're going to deal with a forest fire and it's going to wipe out towns, burn them down like the shanties they are. And then they go. And then people come on the news, boo-hoo-hoo. Time out. You knew this was a risk. You knew this was a possibility. Why are the rest of us have to cover the cost for you? You want to live in California, that's great. You pay the price for it, not me. You know what I got to deal with? I got to deal in the wintertime with 30 below zero weather and sometimes even worse than that. I don't want to hear it. Don't care. Got my own problems, not interested. And that's my commentary. Now, I know a lot of you listen to this in California. I would say this. Get out. Get out of that state while you can. Because the way, you know, if Hollywood wants to sit there and make all their silly movies and check all the boxes and everything else, let them pay higher taxes. Let them pay for the foolishness. Now that I've got my mother moved out of the state of Illinois, I can concentrate on getting myself the hell out of here. So, yeah, we do get offers on the house, but it's not, you know, it's one of those deals where you say, you don't have to repair anything. We'll buy it as is. You don't have to do anything. Well, yeah, that's really nice, but they're only going to offer you 10 to 15 cents on the dollar for the house. Remember that. So next time you see those commercials, you go, I know what you guys are doing. And I don't blame them. I don't blame them for doing it. Yeah, go ahead. I mean, if you want to become, you know, land baron, have at it. Me, I want to sell my house, and I will never buy another house again. I would just assume live in my RV. By the way, we did pass, coming back on Monday, fifth wheel blows by us on I-80 East. By Iowa 80. truck stop, the world's largest truck stop. Pretty cool. But they go by, and on the back of their fifth wheel, it says, "The wife and I quit our jobs, sold our house, and are now, and follow us on our interstateadventures.com. And I'm thinking, man, that's what I want to do. I don't care if anybody follows me on Facebook or TikTok, because I don't have any of those. I don't care. I just thought I'd mention it. And you know what? Actually, if you think about it, it's probably cheaper to live in your RV anyways than just to buy a house. Just saying, putting it out there. Okay, now what I want to talk to you about is this, my friends. Where is it? Putin and the nuclear, I've been watching this stuff. And I have to tell you this. If a man points a gun at you and threatens to shoot you, you should take him at his word. Now, you could pull down your own weapon and get into it, Let the lead fly. And if you win and you hit him, and he can say, "I really didn't mean it." Oh, well, guess what? Too bad. Now, we have Putin, and I'm not a Putin apologist. I know a lot of you said, "Well, he had to do. There were Nazis in Ukraine." They're the National Workers' Socialist Party is in the United States as well. Should we also be invaded? How about this? How about let countries who have that issue deal with that issue? It's an internal affair, had nothing to do with them. Sometimes I think it's just an excuse. Anyways, regardless, I'm not going down that rabbit hole. So, when the Russians are being forced back further and further, they have said, "We will use nuclear weapons if we have to." They've said it more than once. How many times do they have to say it? Well, I got to tell you, that brainstem sitting in the Oval Office, I got to tell you guys, I don't trust him. And if I had a prepper group, I would be with my members now and start staging things, getting things ready. And if nothing happens, so be it. Now, should the Russians deploy a tactical nuke? They crossed the nuclear Rubicon. There is no going back. Now, we've heard, in the media how the United States says, it will be, we will react strongly. We have a strong response. Let me ask you something, my friends. If the United States responds, let's say they take out with non-nuclear weapons, they hit a Soviet command post, several of them. How are the Russians going to respond to that? Do you really think any Russian is going to sit there and say, "Well, I'm okay with this"? They will respond to it. And where it is, I don't know. I don't know, but once the nuclear Rubicon is crossed, that door is open, the genie's out of the bottle, there ain't going back. So let me do a little stuff here. So let's talk something here from The Week. Who wrote this? A good article. Peter Weber. Good stuff. He wrote a great article, said, "What would actually happen if Putin hit Ukraine with tactical nukes?" Now, we're going to talk about the nuclear and geopolitical fallout explained. Preppers, you got to listen. So, Putin has raised the specter of a nuclear attack on Ukraine last week, as a matter of fact, when he announced his intention to annex an area of eastern and southern Ukraine roughly the size of Portugal. By the way, Portugal, beautiful country. Since then, Ukraine has continued pushing back Russian troops in those areas. Now, Moscow has now officially, if illegally, annexed them. These humiliating setbacks in Putin's war, combined with a botched and unpopular military draft, have prompted broad discontent up and down Russian society and open sparring on state-controlled TV. The pressure building on Ukraine is raising, the pressure building on Putin is raising concerns in the West that he might actually use a low-yield tactical nuke in Ukraine. And in fact, at least two members of his inner circle, the Chechen leader Ramzan Kadyrov and the Wagner financier Yevgeny Prigozhin, have openly advocated this path. So what actually happened if Russia resorts to nuclear warfare in Ukraine? So let's take a look at what Putin would lose and gain and how the West might respond and how bad it would be for Ukraine, not to mention the rest of Europe. So let's start off. What kind of nuclear weapon would Putin use? He has lots of options on hand. Now, great secrecy surrounds Russia's arsenal of tactical arms, but they vary in size and power. And they are believed to be about 2,000 such weapons at Putin's disposal. For months now, computer simulations from the Pentagon, American nuclear labs, and intelligence agencies have been trying to model what might happen and how the United States could respond if Putin nukes Ukraine. But that's no easy task given the sizes and varieties of Russia's arsenal. I got to tell you, my friends, between the politicization of the Department of Justice and the Central Intelligence Agency, I don't find them to be reliable sources of anything other than enforcers of the Democratic National Committee's wishes. Instead, I would rely on the Defense Intelligence Agency and the Reconnaissance Information Agency, because you never hear about them. They're in the deep background and they're doing their thing. I would rely on them before relying on the CIA, because they've been, well, I don't know, they're just useless as far as I'm concerned. You can't trust them no matter what. All right, let's get back to it. So most of Russia's tactical nukes have a small fraction of the destructive power of the bombs the United States dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki in 1945. But the weapons Europeans worry the most about is the heavy warhead that fits atop the Iskander-M missile, which could reach cities in Western Europe. Russia figures put the smallest nuclear blast from the Iskander payload at roughly a third of the Hiroshima bomb's explosive power. Russia could also fire a small tactical nuclear weapon and a 6-inch artillery shell. By the way, the United States has it too. And its targets could range from a Ukrainian military base or concentration of troops to a small city. Of course, even a small nuclear explosion would be devastating to any affected area. So would it turn the tide of war back in Russia's favor? No. Using tactical nukes would be a massive gamble for limited gains that would not achieve Putin's stated war aims. And that's the Institute for the Study of War think tank writes. At best, Russian nuclear use would freeze the front lines in their current positions and enable the Kremlin to preserve its currently occupied territory in Ukraine. But for even those limited gains, Putin would likely need to use multiple tactical nuclear weapons, ISW says, and that would raise the risk of Western retaliation and the cost Russia would inevitably bear. Also, it's difficult to use the battlefield tactical nuclear weapons effectively, especially against a mobile Ukrainian force. Now, I do not like this guy. Retired General Wesley Clark. I don't trust him at all, mainly because he's a military man who's a liberal Democrat. He's as bad as Milley. A fucking disgrace in my book. So Clark, the former Supreme Allied Commander of NATO forces in Europe, tells CNN, "We've done it in exercises for years in the United States military during the Cold War and found that it's a lot more difficult problem than it looks like on paper. Even with like a 10 kiloton warheads, the area of destruction is relatively small. The likelihood of missing is relatively high. You create a hell of a mess, a big mess in the country, but it may not have the military significance that he thinks." Now, Russia could drop several tactical bombs and a nuclear terror attack against one or more major Ukrainian population centers or critical infrastructure in hopes of shocking Ukraine into surrender or the West into cutting off aid to Ukraine, ISW notes. But it's pretty clear by now that such attacks would be highly unlikely to force Ukraine or the West to surrender, and it would be a tremendous gamble of the sort that Putin has historically refused to take. So, what kind of nuclear fallout would there be from a small-yield nuke? How much destruction and lingering radiation would result from a tactical nuclear strike? It depends on factors including the size of the weapon and the winds. But even a small nuclear explosion could cause thousands of deaths and render a base or a downtown area uninhabitable for years. There's really only one dramatic real-life comparison on Ukrainian soil, and that would be the Chernobyl nuclear reactor meltdown. And as with the 1986 disaster, if the wind blows east, which it very well might, the radiation released by the Russian weapons could easily blow back into Russian territory. It's kind of like using pepper spray. If you're going to deploy your pepper spray, make sure you're upwind of it. Because I'm going to tell you, there's nothing worse than trying to spray the bad guy and you get him and then you get the back blast from it. Now you've contaminated everybody. All right. So, the truth is we can't predict the physical consequences of such an attack confidently, writes Edward Geist. He's a policy researcher at the RAND Corporation. What we think of as nuclear weapons effects such as blast and fallout are incredibly complicated physical phenomena that result from the interaction of the radiation and materials emitted by the detonating weapon with the matter in the surrounding environment. The models we do have are based on limited data from the Cold War era atmospheric nuclear weapons test, and these models could potentially be extremely misleading and fail to predict the catastrophic collateral effects, Geist explains. The best modeling we have suggests even if nuclear weapons were detonated at a safe height, they would probably create their own cloud system and rain down radioactive drops, creating disastrous radiological contamination on the ground, including the water supply. Now, what about the geopolitical fallout? If Putin uses nuclear weapons in Ukraine, Russia could become an international pariah, and the West would try to capitalize on the detonation to try to bring China and India and others who are still buying Russian oil and gas into sanctions they have resisted. Now, China and India have already publicly signaled their unease with Putin's Ukraine war, and if they and other large neutral to friendly large nations stop buying Russian oil, Russian economy collapses. Now, the 77-year-old tradition of nuclear non-use, that the nuclear taboo, is the single most important accomplishment of the nuclear age. That's Brown University political scientist Nina Tannenwald, and she writes that in the Scientific American. It is a primary obligation of leaders today to make sure nuclear weapons are never used again. Putin and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov should stop threatening nuclear weapons. Other world leaders should express shock and outrage and make it clear that nuclear threats are irresponsible and unacceptable. Again, if they point a gun at you, it's only fair and prudent to suggest they're going to use it. So how would the U.S. and Europe respond? That idiot Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, poor boy hasn't got the brains God gave trees, I'm here to tell you. And he said publicly that the Biden administration has made it clear to Russia it would face unspecified catastrophic consequences if it uses nuclear weapons in Ukraine. That response wouldn't have to involve nuclear weapons. And that's General Petraeus when he told ABC's This Week. Hypothetically, the U.S. and NATO would take out every Russian conventional force that we can see and identify on the battlefield in Ukraine, also in Crimea, and every ship in the Black Sea. Do you not think, if you do that, what is the Russian response going to be? Strategic nuclear weapons deployment? I'm just putting it out there. You know, it was the same problem they had in 1962, where the military was advocating wiping out, hitting every nuclear missile in Cuba. The problem is, that you'll be killing Russian technicians, Russian civilians. And the question is, how are the Russians going to respond? And they will respond. You may not like the response, but they will respond. So the U.S. would ideally show Putin that the West is prepared to respond by readying air power in nearby NATO countries, Clark told CNN. Taking out those troops, those Russian troops on the ground is tough. We could take out Russian maritime assets. We could go after certain logistics and control points, but it would be a big, big deal for the United States. Of course it is. It's worth mentioning that Putin has threatened to use tactical nukes on various countries since at least 2014, Tannenwald notes. Putin likes to weigh about his nuclear weapons as a reminder to the West, and perhaps himself, that Russia is still a great power. Still, for all his insinuations, Putin did not directly articulate any new red lines or overtly threaten the use of nuclear weapons against Ukraine if Ukrainian counteroffensives continue. And that's what the ISW underscores. So Putin could reach a point of desperation where he uses a tactical nuclear weapon in Ukraine, but he's most likely just saber-rattling, and he likely incorrectly assesses that his nuclear brinksmanship will lead the United States and its allies to pressure Ukraine to negotiate. That's what the ISW assesses. The more confident Putin is that nuclear use will not achieve decisive effects, but will draw direct Western conventional military intervention in the conflict, the less likely is to conduct a nuclear test. So, just an idea. So let's ask ourselves this. How the U.S. might respond to a Russian nuclear attack. This is from The Hill, Ellen Mitchell. Tuesday she wrote this, 2 days ago. So, U.S. officials, since the start of Russia's attack on Ukraine, have stressed that there are plans being developed to counter a range of moves by Moscow, but have kept specifics under wraps. I'm not sure that's a good idea. While the administration says there's no signs that the Kremlin has made moves toward a nuclear strike and that Washington has not changed its own nuclear position, experts say the potential U.S. options could turn into a very real scenario given Russia's floundering military campaign and an increasingly frustrated Putin. Mark Kansian, a former Pentagon official turned defense expert at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, said a U.S. response to a major Russian attack would be twofold, one military, one diplomatic. If the Ukrainians kept fighting, we would continue our flow of aid and we'd probably take the gloves off in terms of weapons provided to Kiev, he told The Hill. At the top of Ukraine's wish list is the Army Tactical Missile System, a surface-to-surface missile that can travel four times farther than anything Kiev has now in its fight against Russia. The embattled country has pressed the U.S. for the system for months, but Washington has been hesitant to provide it because of over fears it could escalate the conflict. However, should Moscow use a tactical nuclear weapon on Ukrainian troops or civilians, or even detonate such a device away from populated areas, by the way, they're thinking, if he does detonate a nuclear weapon, it could very well be in the Black Sea. Anyways, so Kansian predicted the administration would finally allow Kiev to have the ATACs and anything else they wanted to go after Russian targets. Now, on the diplomatic side of things, Russian use of nuclear weapons could very well prompt countries such as India, China, and Turkey, the latter, Turkey, a NATO ally, to put pressure on Putin economically. Now, a nuclear strike would really, I think, put them under a lot of pressure to go along with the sanctions and take a tougher line towards Russia. So Russia would lose these lifelines that they've been clinging to and nurturing, he said. Once again, we talked about Sullivan. He talked about catastrophic consequences should Moscow deploy nuclear weapons and send a more specific ultimatum had been delivered to Moscow privately. Biden, oh God, has said since the start of the war that U.S. troops will not be sent to Ukraine, and experts warned that a nuclear response to a nuclear attack could quickly escalate into a nuclear world war. Strategic. Petraeus offered a prediction of how the U.S. would respond to a Russian nuclear attack on Sunday, though he noted he had deliberately avoided speaking with Sullivan about it. So, here's the hypothetical. We would respond by leading a collective effort that would take out every Russian conventional force that we can see and identify on the battlefield in Ukraine, also in Crimea, and every ship in the Black Sea. Laura Cooper, the deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Russia, Ukraine, and Eurasia, said Tuesday that U.S. officials have continually consulted with allies about the Russia threat, and the nuclear threat that Russia poses is just one aspect of that, and certainly the NATO forum is our premier forum for consultation on these issues, end quote. One Austrian official told The Hill that it's offered the country as a neutral ground for difficult negotiations and is ready to host de-escalation talks and maintain channels with Russia. Though Putin's national televised speech last month was not his first time raising the specter of nuclear war, current and former U.S. officials have raised new alarms over the Kremlin's increasingly bellicose nuclear rhetoric as it moves to annex four regions of Ukraine. August 21st, Putin threatened that Moscow would deploy its massive nuclear arsenal to protect Russian territory or its people, which could now include the four Russian-occupied Ukrainian regions. However, both Kiev and Washington said they will not be deterred from continued fighting to take back those regions. What's that? Multiple people shot at a hotel? You know something, my friends? Let me take a quick segue here. Crime is rising. We see violent attacks, especially in the big Democrat-run cities, where they're allowed to run freely, the criminals are, and nothing happens to them. My question to you, and my statement to you is this. How much worse does it have to get? So if you keep voting Democrat, you'll find out. You'll see how bad it's going to get. Getting back to it. So, God, this guy lacks my confidence as well. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, interview with CNN, aired Sunday, they said that he hasn't seen intelligence to suggest the Russian leader has chosen to use nuclear weapons. There are no checks on Mr. Putin. You know, Lloyd, perhaps if you stop playing around with your woke agenda, maybe the military might be able to do its freaking job. So, to be clear, Austin said, the guy who makes a decision, it's one man. So Kirby, the National Security Council's coordinator for strategic communication, said Monday, the U.S. is closely watching Russian activity at the Zaporizhzhia power plant, another location. Putin could choose to escalate the war. How interesting. And former National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster on Sunday said, Putin is under extreme pressure due to battlefield failures, domestic outcry over a mobilization order that could send hundreds of thousands of reservists into the war. I think the message to Putin is, if you use nuclear weapons, it's a suicide weapon. And the response from NATO and the United States doesn't have to be nuclear, McMaster told Face the Nation. Fears were further stoked this week when an online video emerged of a train in Russia appearing to carry equipment from a Kremlin military unit that handles nuclear weapons. The video, which Pentagon officials could not confirm, shows military vehicles allegedly from the secretive 12th Main Directorate of the Russian Ministry of Defense being transported on the train, according to Konrad Muska, an aerospace and defense analyst focused on Russia and Belarus. The Kremlin unit is responsible for nuclear munitions, their storage, maintenance, transport, and issuance. Muzika tweeted Sunday. He says, I have seen these reports. I have nothing to corroborate, Cooper told reporters Tuesday when asked about the video. Exactly. I've seen the video. Anyways, so pressed on whether the Pentagon has seen anything to indicate that Russia is contemplating the use of nuclear weapons, she said officials have certainly heard that saber rattling from Putin, but sees no signs that would cause us to alter our posture. Cooper also declined to answer questions on whether the U.S. has seen any movement of Russia's nuclear forces, citing the protection of U.S. intelligence. Okay, my friends, this is important. You're probably thinking, what are the 8 warning signs before a Russian nuclear strike? This is from Ask a Prepper. Good stuff. So, the basic threat is that if we don't stand back and let Putin do what he wants, he's going to go nuclear. Whether that means an all-out nuclear attack, a nuclear war of tactical nukes targeted at whichever country raises its ire at that particular moment. Either way, one tactical nuke could easily lead to an all-out nuclear war, especially if it exploded in a member country of the NATO alliance. NATO was created to protect Western Europe from invasion by the former Soviet Union, and while that political body no longer exists, the Russian Federation is its successor. And don't forget, Putin was a colonel in the KGB during the Cold War, so he's grown up with communism. He was indoctrinated with communism. Now Putin, who's a part of the KGB, dreams of a return to the glory days of the defunct empire, and his attack on Ukraine seems to be a step in his campaign to make that happen. Unfortunately for Ukraine, they aren't a part of NATO, but several of the countries sending them military aid are. Should Putin decide that such aid is crossing the line of what neutral countries are allowed to do during war, his response could very well be to attack the offending country with a nuke. According to the Mutual Defense Clause of the NATO Treaty, that's Article 5, that attack would require a military response from every member of NATO, including the United States. Now, that line may have already been crossed with countries sending military hardware to Ukraine. Worse than that, Jen Psaki, the White House spokesman, publicly told reporters that the United States was providing intel information to Ukraine, something that is considered casus belli, that's Latin for a cause for war, and it constitutes taking sides as a party to the hostilities. By the way, quick note, watching Karine Jean-Pierre trying her best to be the press secretary, Mushroom Head, I call her Mushroom Head because of her hairstyle. You got it, she has to do something about that. Plus that and her book of answers, if it's not in that binder, she has no idea. No idea what the answer is. You know why she doesn't know what the answer is? I don't know. She should know. I have to flip through my pages, and you know damn well, she's going to call on Ducey, Peter Ducey. She has to. When she does, her little sphincter muscle has to just tighten up. It's got to get like a knot, knowing that Ducey's going to throw a question at her that is just going to drive her crazy, because she's got to give out the official line, which is who the hell knows what it is for the day, particular day of the week. I'm just saying. This Mushroom Head, she's a goof. All right. Now, while most Americans support Ukraine in the war, the fact that we are taking sides by providing intelligence information to Ukraine is something that should have been kept secret. You can't keep anything secret in Washington, D.C. You want to start keeping secrets, this is how you do it. You run down who the leakers are, and you hang them from the gallows publicly. Let the word go forth. You leak, you hang. Period. We're not going to fire you. We're going to hang you. We're going to execute you. That's how you stop leaks. Oh, well, that's just me being the emperor. So, the question which faces us now is whether Putin will push the button. The only thing stopping him is fear of retaliation. That fear may not be all that much if he thinks that President Biden won't retaliate. Who the hell knows what Biden's... You know, if you're Joe Biden, if you're in Joe Biden world, you're lucky to know where the hell you are at any given time of the day, much less what the hell's going on. So, what should we be watching for to know when Putin is getting ready to push the button? Signs that have already happened. So let's start with the very few real signs that have already happened. While these are not as serious as the ones to follow, there is a progression in the process. The fact that these have already happened just means that we are already on the road towards that button being pushed. Let's start with the threats of the use of nukes. All this started out with Putin making some rather clear threats about his willingness to use nuclear arms in the current conflict. Those threats have continued, some openly, while others have been references that are a bit more obscure. Either way, the message has gotten through, and world leaders are taking it seriously. Putin going into hiding. It's normal for political leaders to go into hiding during a war as they're the prime targets, but if anything, there is even more likely when they're getting ready to launch a nuclear missile strike. As best we know, Putin isn't suicidal. So even though he is willing to gamble with the life of his country, he apparently isn't willing to gamble with his own life or the lives of his family. He has gone into hiding, which we know, he, as I reported yesterday, he is in a bunker outside of Moscow. There are apparently those who are looking for Putin, either to deal with him as snipers do, or take him prisoner as a war criminal. One Russian oligarch, has offered a $1 million reward to anyone in the Russian military who takes Putin prisoner, claiming that it is their responsibility to do so. Which brings me to my next point, my friend. And that is this. A couple episodes ago, we went through the progression of the Russian nuclear strike order. How it goes from Putin on down. There is a 20-minute delay between levels. Putin gives the order to his chief of staff and another a general officer. They will then transmit that order to their appropriate branches, units. Those units then have 20 minutes. 20 minutes, the clock starts tick-tocking, to confirm the launch order. Those units that are given the heads up will then pass the order down to the silos or submarines or whatever units that will actually be doing the firing. Those units now have 20 minutes to call back and confirm and authenticate the launch order. Somewhere down that line, I've got to believe, especially in the higher ranks, even if Putin does give the order, I'm wondering how many of them are actually going to follow through with that order and issue the order, or issue the order and then cut all communication so that the launch order cannot be authenticated. Just an idea. So raising the readiness of level of Russian missile forces, that's already happened. But Putin has raised the level of readiness for Russian nuclear forces, either as an act of brinksmanship or in preparation for using them. In either case, it means that these forces can launch much faster than they could if they were still at peacetime levels of readiness. While they are now at their highest possible level with a finger poised over the button, they're close. There is no button. Keys. No button. A demonstration attack. Now, the artillery attack on the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, the largest nuclear plant in Europe, can be seen to be an escalation of hostilities with nuclear overtones. There's no way that plant was targeted accidentally, not in today's world of computerized weapons and satellite position locating. While Russia doesn't use a GPS satellite system, they have their own, and I don't believe in coincidence. So, it seems very suspicious that the only reactor they fired upon, the one that caught fire, was down for maintenance. That indicates some rather current and accurate intel information. Chances of blowing up were minimal, and if an artillery round went long and hit one of the other reactors, they could claim it was an accident. Now, less about signs that are yet to come. So far, the signs we are seeing don't indicate that Putin's finger is poised, but it looks like he's keeping it near. Whether or not he decides to push will depend on his reading of the situation. Nothing else. It doesn't matter so much what other countries of the world do at this point. It's as how he interprets their actions. He has started this war and he's got to come out with it with some gain or he will lose face. Something he can't afford and his ego will not allow. So while Russian nuclear forces are at a heightened alert and readiness level, they are not yet at their highest possible level. There is still some room for it to go up, something that Putin will want to do before giving the order to launch. Russia still has a number of liquid-fueled ICBMs. The fuel used in these rockets is highly corrosive, so it is not stored in the rockets, but rather in nearby tanks, and it does take some time to fuel those rockets once the order is given. Raising the alert level to the maximum level will also mean fueling those rockets as they are ready to fly. If Putin gave the order before fueling them, the attack would be either delayed or carried out in a haphazard manner, hence the importance of fueling them beforehand. Putin cutting off communication with foreign governments. Anyone who has watched a Western knows that there's time when the gunmen stop talking and just stare at each other waiting for the other guy to draw. Now, while that's Hollywood's rendition of things, and it's crapped up because it's Hollywood, it is based upon the reality that there's usually a pause before an attack. When Putin reaches the point where he's seriously contemplating a nuclear strike, he will stop accepting calls from other heads of government. Now, what the government, now on one hand, he won't want to give away his planned actions, and on the other hand, he won't want to give them the chance to talk him out of it either. There's also a chance that Putin will break off formal communications with some governments, closing embassies and recalling his ambassadors before attacking. My guess is, depending on where the target area is, if there are Russian troops there and they're not being pressed on a Ukrainian attack, and you see a voluntary withdrawal, that's a sign. Now, it's probably unlikely as it would telegraph his intentions too well, but if it does happen, we can be sure that his finger is poised above the button and he's about to press it. Now, moving other government leaders out of Moscow. Fairly clear that Putin and his family are out of Moscow in some secret location. Rumor has it that he has a private bunker complex somewhere in the mountainous Altai Republic. But at the moment, the rest of the Russian government is in place and operating. But the Russians, like our own government, have plans for moving their political leadership out of Moscow in the event of a nuclear war. Putin is likely to make that move, protecting his own government before ordering the launch. And as I just talked about, moving Russian troops out of harm's way. Now, that will probably be the last move he will make before launching a nuclear strike, move your own forces out of the danger zone. That would include grounding aircraft, having ships move farther out to sea, and having troops disengaged there too close to the projected epicenter of the explosion. It is unlikely that all his troops will be moved, as he still has a conventional war going on. Only those who are close enough to the targeted areas will be moved in order to protect those troops. That may look like a retreat, but it'll be more like a quarterback dropping back before he throws the ball. Those troops will be regrouping, rearming, and preparing to go on the offensive as soon as the nuclear part of the attack is over. So those, my friends, are some of the signs we should look out for. And I think most of the stuff we see, for example, and I think the big one is government officials suddenly disappearing. Especially here in the United States. Now, I don't know how they are in Russia. I haven't caught any of their television programming, but I have to do that. But, for example, here in the United States, name one politician who is not a media whore. They're like the Jesse Jackson. Stick a camera in his face, and he's there. Promise him you'll have cameras and coverage there, he's there. Same thing with our politicians. Doesn't even matter what party they are. Put a camera on me. I'm a media whore. If all of a sudden you don't see that happening anymore, that's a clue. Everybody's either getting out of town, going to ground, or in some case, going underground. That's a clue. That is a clue. So, I think it's something that we as preppers should be aware of in the back of our minds. We see things, it's like, huh. Bear in mind, not everything is as it appears to be. It just isn't. For example, what if Putin just decides to detonate one in the Black Sea? Big splash, big steam explosion, a lot of water. Who does it really hurt? If he detonates one in the Black Sea, no casualties to anyone, anywhere. And it's extreme, it's at the low end, the very low end of their yield, of their arsenal. We're going to go kill Russians? Really? NATO's going to do an airstrike? No. I don't think so. I'm just putting it out there because I've seen a lot of people going nuts on social media. So, my friends, what do I have? This is it. All right. Wow, sorry, it's been an hour. I didn't want to go this long, but this is something I think we have to talk about as preppers. As preppers and prepper groups go, if you're not in a prepper group, that's okay. You don't need to, but you can't hook up with two or three other preppers. Okay, here you go. I have started refreshing my knowledge with in my library. I've started putting things ready, getting things together. Not that they together more than they would be. So with that said, my friends, perhaps the time has come that you might want to consider doing the same. Because the fact is, you don't want to try and be doing this under the gun. All right. And if you hear the EAS system going, that's bad juju. Oh, by the way, I've heard some people bitching and complaining that the United States is sending arms to Taiwan. Who cares? I'd rather see them fighting and dying the Chinese, the communist Chinese, instead of our troops. Instead of our boys and girls. So arm them to the teeth. Just saying. We cannot, the United States cannot be the policeman to the world. We can't! And nor should we. You know, there's something in, you remember the old Star Trek series? Especially during Star Trek Next Generation? Many episodes. They dealt with, what they call the internal affairs or the internal concerns of another planet or another society. And part of Starfleet's thing was, we don't get involved in internal matters. That's a good philosophy that I think the United States could live with. But that's me. There are some things we should be getting involved with. Watch what's going on in Korea. It ain't good. Because I got to tell you, my friends, I'm not so sure I'm in tune with the North Korean electronic guidance system. I mean, if they're launching shit over Japan, just think of what happens. North Korea does their launch. Something goes haywire with one of their guidance systems, and that bastard missile just plants itself onto a Japanese island and detonates. Ooh, bad juju is coming down the pipe. And no, I don't think the United States military is capable of fighting a two-front war. Not with the clowns they have in charge now. They're discharging people. Well, you didn't get vaccinated. You have to be discharged. And then you turn around and you bitch because I've got a shortage. I got 25,000 people to replace. I don't have those recruits. You just discharged 20,000. I don't care if they're vaccinated. Idiots. For the love of God. Where does the stupidity end? It is in November. You can change it. If you like what's going on, vote Democrat. If you want to change, and you better hope for it's a good change, you better vote for the Republicans. You better vote your conscience. Now, if you got Republicans who are rhinos, toss their ass out. Okay, I'm getting crazy here. I'm going to go. Hey, prep today, live tomorrow. All right, my friends, I'm John Jeffress here on the Jeffress Brief. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.